A Canticle for Leibowitz. Part 4 of a series in 15 parts, adapted from a novel by Walter Miller Jr. A Canticle for Leibowitz. Here continueth the chronicle, set down daily by the brethren of Blessed Isaac Edward Leibowitz, in their abbey in the desert of the Southwest. It came to pass that Brother Francis Gerard found an ancient room beneath the ground. And this room was inscribed in the ancient speech, Fallout Survival Shelter. And within the room were writings found, and a skull. The writings, it was said, were those of the Blessed Leibowitz himself, and the skull that of his wife. Moreover, it was said by some that the Blessed Leibowitz had appeared in a vision unto Brother Francis, and shown him the way to the room. Now this was not said by Brother Francis. He spoke only of an old man, who was very flesh and blood. Nevertheless, much scandal had arisen over these things. So the Lord Abbot was not willing for the present that Francis should pass beyond the rank of novice.
Brother Francis spent 7 years in the novitiate, 7 Lenten vigils in the desert. He became highly proficient in the imitation of wolf calls. For the amusement of his brethren, he summoned the pack by howling from the abbey walls after dark. Then one day, a messenger from New Rome. After a long conference with Abbot Arcos, the messenger came looking for Francis, and found him on his hands and knees, scrubbing the kitchen floor.
We have been studying the documents you discovered.
Yes.
Yes, quite a few of us are convinced they're authentic.
I'm not permitted to mention the matter, Father.
Oh, that? That's all right. Your abbot's given us permission to talk about it.
Oh.
Now, we expect the case for canonization of your founder to be reopened soon. And if it is, it will be because your abbot Arcos is a wise and prudent man. Yes. By turning the relics over to someone else for examination, he... Well, you do understand, don't you?
No, Father. I had supposed he thought the whole thing too trivial to spend any time on.
Trivial? I think not. If your order turns up evidence, the court has to consider the source. So your abbot very wisely told you, hands off the shelter.
You're going to open it again?
No, not I. But when the court is ready, it will. Now tell me, how did it happen? I'll need the whole story from you.
Well, it started because of the wolves. You see, they prowl around here at night. I was building this stone shelter.
A few days later, the messenger left, and Arcos called for Francis.
Do you still feel your vocation is with us?
If my Lord Abbot will pardon my execrable vanity...
Oh, let's ignore your execrable vanity for a moment. Do you or don't you?
Yes, Reverend Father.
Well, I think we're convinced of it too. If you're ready to commit yourself, I think the time's ripe for you to profess your solemn vows.
Oh.
What's this? You're not glad to hear it? You're not? What's wrong?
Francis had fainted.
Dear God.
Two weeks later, vowing poverty, chastity, and obedience, also the vows of a booklegger and memorizer, Francis received blessings and a bindle stiff and became a professed monk of the Order of Leibowitz, chained by chains of his own forging to the foot of the cross and the rule of the order. He was transferred from the kitchen and apprenticed to the master of the copy room, an aged monk named Horner.
Most of us do better work on the assigned copy if we have our own projects too. If you finish your assigned work before the day's over, you may turn to your own project.
May I use the time to make a copy of the Leibowitz blueprint I found?
Oh, well, I don't know, son. Our Lord Abbot is a little sensitive on that subject.
But you know they fade, brother, and it's been handled a lot in the light.
Well, I suppose it would be a rather brief project.
Perhaps I could include it as one of a set. If I made several duplicates, some of the others...
What you're suggesting is that by including the Leibowitz blueprint in a set, you might escape detection.
Well,
Father Abbott might not notice if he happened to wander through.
I certainly didn't mean
all
to
right,
see the...
All right, make duplicates of any recopied prints in bad condition, and if anything else gets mixed up in the lot, I'll try not to notice.
So Francis worked on the blueprints. Not the Leibowitz print at first, but others that needed recopying. He did not know why the ancients used white lines and lettering on a dark background. But if they'd taken the trouble to put ink where blank paper would ordinarily be, they must have had their reasons. So Francis recopied the documents as best he could. Even though spreading blue ink around tiny white letters was tedious and wasteful of ink. Only after a year of spare time work on other blueprints did Francis go to the memorabilia files, take out the Leibowitz print, the one he'd found so many years before. He studied it till he could see the whole amazing complexity with his eyes closed. But still, he knew no more than he'd known before. It made no sense. But he began work at duplicating every detail, even to the copying of a central brownish stain, which he thought might be the blood of the blessed martyr, but which Brother Jairus suggested was only the stain left by a decayed apple core. Brother Jairus, who joined the copy room at the same time as Francis, seemed to enjoy teasing him.
What, pray, is the meaning of transistorized control system for Unit 6B?
Clearly, it is the title of the document.
Ah, clearly. But what does it mean, learned brother?
It is the name of the diagram which lies before your eyes, Brother Simpleton. What does Jairus mean?
Oh, very little, I'm sure. Forgive my density, please. You have successfully defined the name by pointing to the creature named. But now the creature diagram itself represents something, does it not? What does the diagram represent?
The transistorized control system for Unit 6B, obviously.
Quite clear. Eloquent. If the creature is the name, then the name is the creature.
I would imagine that the diagram represents an abstract concept rather than a concrete thing.
Oh?
Perhaps the ancients had a method for depicting pure thought. It's clearly not a recognizable picture of an object.
Yes, yes. It's clearly unrecognizable.
On the other hand, perhaps it does depict an object, but only in a very stylistic way, so that one would need special training.
Or special eyesight.
In my opinion, it's an abstraction of perhaps transcendental value, expressing a thought of the Beatus Leibowitz.
Bravo! Now, what was he thinking about?
Why, circuit design. That's what it says here.
And what discipline does that art pertain to, brother? What is its genus, species, property, and difference? Or is it only an accident?
Well, all right. Observe this column of figures and its heading electronic parts numbers. Now, there once was an art, or a science, called electronics, which might belong to both art and science.
Ah, thus settling genus and species.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as to difference, if I may pursue the line, what was the subject matter of electronics?
Well, that too is written. The subject matter of electronics was the electron.
Ah, so it is written indeed. I am impressed. I know so little of these things. What, pray, was the electron?
Well, there is one fragmentary source which calls it a negative twist of nothingness.
What? How did they negate a nothingness? Wouldn't that make it a somethingness?
Well, perhaps the negation applies to twist.
Ah, then we would have an untwisted nothing, eh? Have you discovered how to untwist a nothingness?
Not yet.
We'll keep at it, brother. Oh, how clever they must have been, those ancients. To know how to untwist nothing. Keep at it, and you may learn how. Then we'd have the electron in our midst, wouldn't we? Whatever would we do with it? Put it on the altar in the chapel?
Jairus's teasing did not lessen Francis's devotion to his project. But the copy of the relic did not seem enough. It was too stark. It did not commemorate the saintly qualities of the Beatus in any visible way. Then, one day, the answer came to him. Glorificamus, an illuminated copy. He found the finest available lambskin, cured it, stretched it, stoned it to a perfect surface, then bleached it to a snowy whiteness, and stored it away while he planned his design. He spent every available minute of his spare time looking through the memorabilia, looking for clues to the meaning of the Leibowitz print. He found nothing resembling the squiggles on the drawing, nothing to help him interpret its meaning. But after a long time, he stumbled across a fragment of a book whose subject matter was blueprinting. It seemed to be a piece of an encyclopedia. The reference was brief, and some of the article was missing. But after reading it several times, he began to suspect he had wasted a lot of time and ink. The white-on-dark effect seemed to result from peculiarities of a cheap reproduction process. The original drawing, from which the blueprint had been made, had been black on white. He had to resist the sudden impulse to beat his head against a stone wall. All that ink and labor to copy an accident. So, the color scheme of blueprints was an accidental feature. His glorified copy could reverse the color scheme. His sketchwork was interrupted one afternoon by a presence which loomed behind him and cast its shadow across his copy table.
Well, what have we here?
A drawing, Lord Abbot.
So I notice. But what is it?
The Leibowitz blueprint.
The one you found?
Yes, my lord.
What?
Yes, my lord.
It doesn't look much like it. Why the changes?
It's going to be...
Speak louder!
It's going to be an illuminated cup.
Oh, I see.
Arcos shrugged and walked away. Brother Horner, a few seconds later, wandering past the apprentice's desk, was surprised to notice Francis had fainted. To the amazement of Brother Francis, Abbot Arcos no longer objected to the monk's interest in the relics. The abbot had relaxed. Francis began the actual illumination of the lambskin. The intricacies of scroll work, the excruciating delicacy of the gold inlay work, would be a labor of many years. Slowly, painfully, Brother Francis was making the lambskin a blaze of beauty. Word of his project spread beyond the copy room, and the monks often gathered round his table to watch the work and murmur admiration. Except for Brother Jairus. Brother Horner fell ill. Within weeks, he was on his deathbed. A mass for the dead was chanted early in Advent, while the community expressed its grief in prayer. Arcos quietly appointed Brother Jairus master of the copy room. On the day after his appointment, Jairus came over to Francis's desk.
Brother, I think it would be appropriate now if you were to put away the things of a child and start doing a man's work.
Francis wrapped his precious project in parchment, protected it with heavy boards, and put it away. He made no protest, realizing someday the soul of dear Brother Jairus would depart by the same road as the soul of Brother Horner, and afterward, afterwards. Afterwards, thought Francis, I will finish my work. Providence, however, took an earlier hand in the matter without summoning the soul of Brother Jairus to its maker. From New Rome, Monsignor Malfredo Aguera, the postulator for the Beatus Leibowitz in the canonization procedure. He had come to observe the reopening of the shelter and the exploration of sealed environment, also to investigate such evidence as the abbey could produce that might have a bearing on the case, including, to the abbot's dismay, reports of an apparition of the Beatus, which had, so travelers said, come to one Francis Gerard of Utah.
Dear God.
On the third day of Aguera's visit, the abbot summoned Brother Francis.
You sent for me, my lord abbot?
Yes, I did. Tell me, have you ever thought about death?
Frequently, my lord abbot.
Yes. You pray that your death will not be an unhappy one.
Oh, yes. Often, Reverend Father.
Yes. Then I suppose you'd not care to be suddenly stricken. To have someone use your guts to string a fiddle? To be fed to the hogs? To have your bones buried in unconsecrated ground?
No, my lord.
I thought not. So, be very careful about what you say to Monsignor Aguera.
I?
You. Yes. I can see it clearly. The Leibowitz cause shelved. And poor Brother Francis struck down by a falling brick.
Struck down?
There he lies, in the very midst of us, mind you. And there we stand, looking down in pity, clergy among us, watching him croak his last under our very noses. Pity, huh?
My lord.
Oh, don't blame me. I'll be too busy trying to keep your brothers from carrying out their impulse to kick you to death.
Why?
Not at all, I hope. Because you are going to be careful, aren't you? About what you say to the Monsignor. Otherwise, I may let him kick you to death.
But...
The postulator wants to see you. Please, stifle your imagination. Be certain what you say. Please, try not to think.
Francis felt fright when he tapped at Aguera's door.
Ah, Brother Francis, good to see you. Yes, come in. Yes,
but he saw quickly fright was unfounded. Aguera was a suave and diplomatic elder who seemed interested in the monk's life. After several minutes of preliminary amenities, Aguera approached the slippery subject.
Now, about your encounter...
Yes, Monsignor.
...with the person who may have been the blessed founder...
Oh, I never said he was our blessed Leibowitz.
Of course you didn't. Now, I have here an account of the incident... gathered from hearsay sources, of course, and I'd like you to read it and then either confirm it or correct it.
Yes, Monsignor.
This version is based on traveler stories. Only you can describe what happened firsthand. So I want you to edit it most scrupulously.
Yes, Monsignor. But what happened was really very simple.
Read. Then we'll talk about it, eh?
Yes, Monsignor.
Francis read with apprehension.
Oh.
The apprehension grew to horror.
Oh, no.
Is something wrong?
Monsignor, this... It wasn't like this at all.
No?
No, he only spoke a few words to me. I saw him just that once. He threatened me with a stick. He asked me the way to the abbey and made marks on a rock where I found the shelter. Then I never saw him again.
I see. Uh-huh. No halo?
No, Monsignor.
No heavenly choir?
No.
What about the carpet of roses that grew up where he walked?
No, nothing like that, Monsignor.
He didn't write his name on the rock?
He only made those two marks. I don't know what they meant.
Ah, yes. Well, traveler's stories are always exaggerated. Now, suppose you tell me how it really happened.
So, Francis told him. It didn't take long.
Well, I see. So much for that.
Monsignor, I'm sorry.
Don't give it a second thought. We have enough evidence. The rumors started because of the shelter. We reopened it today, by the way.
Did you find anything more of St. Leibowitz?
A blessed Leibowitz, please. No, not yet. We opened the inner chamber. Had a devil of a time getting it unsealed. 15 skeletons inside, and many fascinating artifacts. Apparently the woman... Oh, it was a woman, by the way.
Oh.
Those remains you found had been admitted to the outer chamber, but the inner chamber was already full.
Was she Emily Leibowitz?
I don't know yet. I believe she was, yes. Yes, I believe... But perhaps I'm letting hope run away with reason. We'll see what we can uncover.
Monsignor Aguera spent 10 days at the archaeological site before returning to New Rome. On the day of his departure, he visited Brother Francis in the scriptorium. Brother Jairus listened closely.
They tell me you were working on a document to commemorate the relics you found. Judging by the descriptions I've heard, I should very much like to see it.
Yes, Monsignor.
Francis went to get it. His hands were trembling as he unpacked the lambskin. He saw Brother Jairus looking on and wearing a nervous frown.
Oh, yes. Yes, beautiful. What glorious color. It's superb. Superb. Finish it. Brother, finish it.
Francis looked at Jairus. The master of the copy room turned away, the back of his neck red. The following day, Francis unpacked his quills, dyes, gold leaf, and resumed labor on the illuminated diagram. A few months after the departure of Monsignor Aguera, there came a second donkey train from New Rome. This time, the expedition was headed by a monsignor with small horns and pointy fangs, who announced that he was charged with the duty of opposing the canonization of the blessed Leibowitz, and that he had come to investigate certain incredible and hysterical rumors.
I understand you are prone to fainting spells, brother.
Yes, Excellency.
Tell me, is there epilepsy in your family?
No, Excellency.
Madness?
No, Excellency.
Mutant neural patterns?
None, Excellency.
I'm not an Excellency. Now we're going to get the truth out of you.
Yes, Monsignor.
How did you happen to discover that shelter, and what is this fantastic twaddle about an apparition?
Francis explained. When he finished, the devil's advocate seemed to find the monk's story too simple-minded to warrant attack.
Well, brother, if that's your story and you stick to it, I don't think we'll be bothered with you at all. Even if it's true, which I don't admit. It's so trivial, it's silly. Do you realize that?
That's what I always thought, Monsignor.
Well, it's high time you said so.
I always said I thought he was probably just an old man.
Monsignor Flout covered his eyes with his hand and sighed heavily. Before leaving the abbey, the devil's advocate, like the saint's advocate before him, stopped at the scriptorium and asked to see the illuminated commemoration of the Leibowitz blueprint. Monsignor Flout gazed at the lambskin in silence. He swallowed hard. At last, he forced himself to nod, then to smile. His horns immediately shortened by an inch, and his fangs disappeared entirely. He departed the same evening for New Rome. Years flowed by, seaming the faces of the young and adding gray to their temples. On the Feast of the Five Holy Fools, a Vatican messenger arrived with glad tidings for the order. Monsignor Flout had withdrawn all objections. Monsignor Aguera's case was proved. The Pope had posted a decree recommending canonization.
Alleluia, 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 alleluia.
The announcement was followed by rejoicing at the Abbey. Arcos, now withered by age and close to dotage, summoned Francis once again.
His Holiness invites us to New Rome for the canonization. Prepare to leave.
I? Alone?
You alone. Brother Pharmacist forbids me to travel. It would not be well for Father Cherokee to leave while I am ill.
Yes, my lord.
Don't faint on me again.
No, my lord.
You're getting more credit than you deserve. But His Holiness invited you anyway.
Me?
Brother Francis tottered.
Holiness?
Yes, yes. Now, we're sending the original Leibowitz blueprint to New Rome. What do you think about taking along your illuminated commemoration as a gift to the Holy Father?
Oh. Brother Francis struggled to remain standing.
Don't you dare faint on me!
Brother Francis lost his struggle.
Dear God.
The abbot revived him, blessed him, called him a good booklegger, and sent him to pack his bindle stick.